I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey guys, welcome to the Kim Kardashian West, the Justice Project panel. We have six great cases that are very interesting to watch. But before we get into that, I'm your host, Sierra Stafford, and I'm joined with three other of my lovely hosts. I have Jeff Williams, Zach Weinberg, and Sanai Moore. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing good.
I'm great.
good. I'm feeling inspired. Very inspired.
How are you guys feeling?
I'm doing good. You know, I was excited to watch this originally just because I am such a fan of Kim. But, you know, this project, this documentary, there was so much more to it than just learning about Kim. You know, this was really learning about the justice reform and, like, the problems that the system has.
Yeah, I came in as more of, I'm a fan of Kim and the Kardashians as a whole, but I came in as a fan of wrongful imprisonment and just and learn about the justice system and all that. So seeing her take her platform for good and showcasing that was just so amazing to see.
Yeah, and I think we kind of all had an idea of what the criminal justice system is like nowadays. But I know for me personally, this kind of opened my eyes to see like what people actually go through and how, you know, things go down in the actual courtroom. So we have six cases that we're going to discuss tonight. And the first one, Alice Johnson. So Alice Johnson, she's been in jail for 22 years now, and she was convicted of a non-violent drug offense. So she was never had no type of criminal background, nothing sketchy of her going on. But tough times came to happen in her life. She has five children. She has one daughter in college, and you know, she lost her job. She lost her son at 12 years old to a drunk driver. So you can just imagine what a parent is going through at that time. So with her going through all of that, she was going through you know, she was out without a job, and she needed a job, and an offer came about for her to be a telephone mule to connect drug dealers with their suppliers. Now, she never seen the drugs. She never actually physically handed the drugs herself, but since she was connected in that way, they charged her with that. So first up for Alice, what did you guys think overall about, you know, how this sentence went down for her and her part, that her role that she actually played in it, and then what she actually got because of it?
When I first heard Alice's case, and for her just being like the telephone basically through it, it's like I felt it was totally unfair to have her. I mean, of course she knew, you know, kind of what she was getting herself into, and okay, she could do time, but to take her life away for something that she can't even give you true information, like to get the big guys of the drug dealers. So to really take her life away, it kind of made me angry inside at the people, you know, the judges and the people who were just in the process of committing her for the crime. I just honestly felt my heart went out to her.
Definitely. Yeah.
This Alice Johnson is kind of like the face of Kim's like work, because this is like the first case she kind of like pursued, but you know, we also saw this play out on the Kardashians. So it's kind of interesting to learn more about her story and hear from her family members, because you don't really get that on Keeping Up, like full in depth of like the full story. I really enjoyed kind of hearing about it, and I'm really glad, you know, Kim was able to get her free.
Yeah, one of the most shocking things was when they were talking about how many years, they were saying life plus 25 years. Yeah. And that's the same time as a Unabomber. And when I heard that, I just like sat there. I was like, how can someone have the same sentence as a bomber that like intent to kill people compared to someone that was just the middleman or a phone person or just like intelligence? Or it just didn't make any sense, and it just didn't sit right. And it just kind of, it started off the show with like something so crazy, and it's heartbreaking to see, but it was great to see that she got out.
Yeah, then like we said, she was a first-time non-violent offender, so you would think they would have some type of leniency towards her, but they didn't. So she went in at the age of 41, and she's now 64 years old, so, you know, over 20 years of her life. But what I do loved about her story was Kim went straight to the White House. Now, I want to say really fast about this picture. I don't know if you guys saw, like, when Kim actually first posted the picture that she took with Trump, and people went crazy, like, what are you doing? Him, everything went crazy. But when we saw that clip in the actual show, it made me realize, oh wow, like she was really fighting for her beyond measures that we even knew about at the time. So I'm just glad that Kim went straight and just went to the big dogs and just went straight to people that she knew that could help him. And so Alice was in Alabama prison, And she was released, actually. So I don't know if you guys saw when Kim gave her the phone call.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my gosh, like, you don't know what's going on. Like, you're released. And you guys, I cried.
Oh my God, for sure. I had chills the entire time.
Yes.
So I was happy to see that for her. And then one more thing, they had to cut. So the Cut 50 is something they put into place to basically like get people that are in prison for longer years to get their sentence cut down or grant them clemency. So that's what something they really used to fight for Alice's case. So I'm glad they mentioned that, because when she was first prosecuted, they didn't use it at all, which we will see for a lot of these other victims as well. So it was just kind of good to see how they took, what steps they took to get mm-hmm. this to happen, what went wrong the first time. So mm-hmm. that was good to see.
And that's like only something Kim could do, because she has such a platform to be able to go right to the White House to make a change and a difference.
Yes. So we're glad for Kim for that. So yeah, big ups to Alice. And, you know, we just hope she keeps faith to stay strong. So our next case was Don Jackson. So this is the one that just kind of hit my heart.
Yeah, this one was hard. This one was really hard.
I mean, they all hit our heart, but I was like, ugh. Mm-hmm. So what happened with Don Jackson? So during her earlier childhood, she was molested starting at the age of 5 from 6 family members. Why she's in prison now, because she killed her step-grandfather, who tried to basically, you know, sexual assault her. She has 7 children. She has been in jail for now 21 years. And the first person to molest her was her mom's boyfriend. So that's why she went to move with her grandmother. And how the step-grandfather ended up happening. So in the midst of all her molestation, she was overdosing, she slit her wrist, she'd been to the hospital. She's had all the signs to show that I need help. I'm actually going through something. I'm not just some mass killer out here. So at the age of 27, she actually stabbed her grandfather to death, her step-grandfather to death, and she was charged with a first-degree murder, sentenced to 30 years. Now, this case here, it struck me on a whole nother level, because like they mentioned in the documentary, you can have all the proof, the evidence, mm-hmm. the hospital records, defense that you were defending yourself. Now, not saying that she doesn't deserve jail time. We're not saying that. But, you know, in this case, they didn't use any of the evidence. They called mm-hmm. it mitigation evidence, which is evidence that you have to basically prove up front. And her attorney told her, like, this information isn't useful, and it wasn't used, hence why she's sentenced 30 years in jail. So talk about this case, guys, for Dunn.
Wow. The entire time, first of all, they swung out the gates with all of this being so emotional for us mm-hmm. to watch. But to hear that, like, she's went through so much trauma and none of that was really taken into consideration, just... it just made me so sad and not have as much faith, you know, when it comes to in our justice system, because, you know, I've always said, I feel that there should be some type of therapy or some type of, you know, counseling for people who do commit murders or who have done things, you know, that they're getting jail time for, because there's a reason why. And that was Kim's big, you know, one of her biggest points. And the show is saying, you know, a lot of this stuff has to do with like what's led up to this. You know, you're going to get jail time because you killed somebody that hurt you. Like, that's crazy to me. That's literally mm-hmm. ludicrous to me.
I mean, I think she definitely deserved to get jail time. She still killed him. Maybe not as much. Yeah. It makes me wonder why the lawyers or the attorneys didn't use the background information. Did they ever say like why they didn't use it? Or was the lawyer just not like trying hard enough for her to win?
She said that she told her it wouldn't be useful, like basically it wouldn't help. Now I don't know how,
like, why would she say that?
Exactly.
It makes me think she wasn't trying hard enough, or she didn't care enough about the person she was representing.
And sometimes it's like that, and you know, sometimes like if you get a public, you know, defender, or you get someone who doesn't have a lot of experience, who doesn't know about, you know, certain laws and certain, you know, mm-hmm. policies, a lot of things that they don't know, they're not going to be, you know, as useful as like lawyers who've been at this for years, or who, you know, really are trying to push for justice. You know, some people aren't like that.
Yeah, one of the things they mentioned in this that was kind of towards the end of Don's section is that one of her sons is actually diagnosed with cancer. And she doesn't have the chance to like be with him during all the chemos, or be with him during whatever stuff he has to take through this time. And like, that hit home for me because like there's people or family members I have to that have cancer in my family. So I know from a personal experience how hard that is. So being able to think that like maybe you wouldn't be in that situation where you can't go see them. Like as a family member, you know every conversation is sacred. Every time you're talking to them, every time you see them is sacred. So to hear that, it like hurt my heart that she's still there. Like she's still trying to fight to get out when her son is still diagnosed with cancer and is fighting for his life and she can't even see him.
And I think go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, like one of the interesting things was that her kids grew up thinking that she was a bad person.
I was
gonna
say that. Yeah.
Okay, twins. Which is so funny because they didn't know the full story. They're kids. They're just like, my mom is in the newspaper, my mom's in jail. Like they never got to really learn until they were older what her backstory was.
Yeah, and I was going to say, yeah, that's the part that made me sad, too. And just to see her son break down, and you can tell her daughter was in, like, complete disbelief. Like, oh, this whole time I grew up thinking she was a real murderer. We realized I know why she did what she did, and I won my mom out. So it's just tough. And like you said, she has 7 children. So she had to miss, you know, birthday parties, you know, growing up, high school, middle school, high school, whatever it was. So it just breaks my heart. And I really do hope she gets the justice she deserves. We didn't get too much on the end about her, but, you know,
it's
I'm sure
pending,
seeing through
right?
and through. Yeah, still pending. Yeah. So yeah, hopefully she does get the justice she deserves, because I mean, if someone does something wrong to you, I feel like you deserve something for defense. You know, I feel like they use defense in court a lot of times, and I feel like that's a case that should be used as that. And the fact that, you know, they have the proof, like Kim said, let's pull up all the documents we can to show that you went through everything you went through. Let's pull up the medical history, the hospital records. Mm-hmm. So I feel like once they get all that paperwork situated, she really might have a good fighting chance. So I think that's what she needed the first time. So shame on her first attorney. But it's okay. Mm-hmm.
He didn't try
it's
hard
okay.
enough.
Then he did. It's okay. Kim to the rescue.
Always. Okay? if she's not gonna get help, like this video is gonna help her. Like this documentary.
Oh, definitely.
I think. So
definitely. Yeah, that's the good thing. You know, they got this platform. If not, you know, if they can't do enough. So our next person we're going to talk about is Alexis Martin. So this was a 15-year-old. So a 15-year-old girl was assaulted. She was set up for sex trafficking. But not only that, the underlying story before all of that is what was so shocking to us. So her mother lost custody of them during because her mother was doing drug trafficking. She was molested by her mom's husband. And the mom, she felt like her mom always chose her. She was raped 4 times from the age from 9 to 11 years old. And this was kind of another case where like the judge kind of had proof but didn't do anything. Well, they didn't really do much, but she said that semen was found in her underwear and he was still found not guilty. So, you know, she just had she went through a lot at a very young age before the sex trafficking part even came about. But you know, the midst of all that, she met this drug dealer who actually she looked at as like a father. And it was like the most reliable person she had in her life.
She called him dad.
She called him dad. And he called her daughter. And a year later, and when she's been knowing him, she tried to, well, he did rape her. He raped her and began sex trafficking her. And when she refused, he said that he would abuse her and threaten to sex traffic her little sister. So she went through a lot just from in her home. And then when she moved outside her home, thinking she had a better life for herself, things just got 10 times worse. And so she was only 15 years old. And we all know once you're under 16, you're considered a juvenile, but she was still tried as an adult. Mm-hmm. And she got a life sentence with parole after serving 20 years. So this one was very heartbreaking for me. What did you guys think about Alexis?
Man. Alexis, like the whole time I was like punching the air because it's like, first of all, it's semen. She said it's semen in her underwear. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't any type of regard for that. That first had me punching the air. And then I had to be like Floyd Mayweather fighting the air, because now, you know, when she disclosed that she doesn't even feel anything anymore and that like the rapes, like she just kept getting raped and the mental abuse that she went through too, she is so strong for being able to still be alive. Like that's something I would love to tell her, is that she is so strong for even being able to still go day by day knowing that one day she's gonna have her chance. And she's so brave for that. She's so brave.
Yeah, it was similar with Alexis and Dawn. It was really like their childhood that kind of screwed them up so much that led them to their mistakes. And it's kind of like, it really is who you surround yourself with. And when you're growing up and you're at like you're vulnerable, you know, your young years, you're getting taught by who's around you. So it just kind of feels like they were just dealt a really bad hand. It sucks.
Yeah. And we kind of touched on it. You said, like, it's crazy how strong she is dealing with how much she's dealt with. And to see what she's doing now, even behind bars, being a mentor to so many people younger than her that could have been taking the same road that she took, it's crazy to see. And it's great to see that she's being so strong and so positive for the people behind her.
That was my favorite part about this video, is that pretty much everyone in prison was using prison as a way to actually learn and better themselves, but not like also better other people. Like every single one of them wanted to give back in some way.
And my girl is certified.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we're gonna talk about the certified dog.
My girl's certified.
Certified. So yeah, she started mentoring young girls. She got her GED and she's a certified dog trainer, or I think that's correct.
Which is very useful. So
very useful. So I was like, okay, sis. And I'm glad you mentioned that she was strong, because when I noticed when Kim sat down with everyone, I mean, everyone was strong, but for her to be so young and with all she went through, I feel like she didn't shed not one tear. She didn't show any type of like pity on herself. She just, even when she was just talking to Kim, I was like, wow, this girl is very strong. And then, you know, to see her mom talking in about her, you know, it was just kind of heartbreaking to see, you know, because her mom, you know, didn't have a good background either. So now it's like her daughter's in her shoes, and it's kind of like, this is just hard to watch and play out. But another interesting thing about this case was the harbor law. So this is a law that came into place. It came into place when her, I think she was after she was already in jail, I believe so.
Yeah.
Or going.
Mm-hmm. I think so, it was like right after.
Yeah, right after. So, but it was a law that could have helped her. So this law is basically for people that, for young women that get sex trafficked, and kind of like gives, like have them towards leanings to them for what they go through, basically. And so this harbor law could have helped her out tremendously. And in Dunn's case, you know, there was things that they could use and they didn't use. So we now see that, you know, with how they're going to fight her case, they're going to re-bring that up. So I really do hope that, you know, this helps her out as well, because I mean, it's kind of sad to see, like, you know, people go away for things they don't deserve or get this crazy time. But also when they have the right things to fight for it, and they still get washed out. Like, it's like, no matter what proof they have, what laws are set, none of it is helping them. So I think that's the most more heartbreaking part about all of this. Like, no matter what you do, they will do whatever they want with you, you know. So that was very sad.
It was kind of like the theme of the whole documentary about how what is fair versus unfair.
Yeah what's just too much. It's punishment, okay, but then just going overboard with it is it's too much.
It's not black and white. Like, there's no, we'll kind of get into this later with mandated sentencing and stuff, but like, there's no black and white. And that's what this whole documentary was showing.
Yeah, definitely. We saw a lot of different people, different age, different races, and it's just crazy. So next case we're going to talk about is Mama Lou S.K. Stewart. So everyone was kind of getting tried at a very young age. That's why they've been in their 20 plus years now. But he was convicted at age 16 for first degree premeditated murder, second degree murder while armed, possession of firearm during a crime of violence. So he had three charges against him, and he has now been in jail for 23 years now. So just like everyone else, you know, he grew up with an abusive father to his mother. His mom and boyfriend murdered his father at the age of 6, I guess, to retaliate. And so with all that happening, he moved into with his aunt and uncle. And the uncle was a drug addict and was abusive to him. So it's kind of like, you know, he left home, you know, can't catch a break. They move around and things go 10 times worse. So when he was 14, he ran away because he was like, I'd rather be in the streets rather than be in this abusive household. And I mean, you know, once you grow up in the project, because he said he was from D.C., it was very a rough time at that time. So it's kind of like, once you go through something like that, you can't really blame anyone or put yourself in their shoes, because, you know, if that's the life, only life they know, it's kind of like, what do you expect out of them, you know? Mm-hmm. So long story short, so he went to confront a local drug dealer after he threatened their families, and there was a shootout that happened in the midst of that. And I want to say one thing I loved about Mamalu, he came great upfront when it happened. He was like, you know, I did what I did. I'm not here sitting here trying to sugarcoat it. But, you know, I have a reason, a rhyme and reason for why I did what I did. So before I get into the other part of him, what did you guys think about his case?
He was very honest, I think, you know, because he knows that he took someone else's life. you know, even though the person threatened to get his mama and his family, you know, you can't yeah. threaten mama like yeah. that. But
I mean, you have to be honest when you're talking to Kim Kardashian. Like, yeah. you want her to help you, you tell her.
Right. You tell her.
Don't BS
the
exact with Kim. She doesn't have to talk to you.
But I feel like when you have any lawyer, they say, tell me everything. Right now, I'm not here to judge you. You're mm-hmm. not guilty or innocent to me. Tell me everything, because me knowing everything is the only way I can help you in your case. If you lie yeah. to me mm-hmm. and it comes out on the other side,
yeah,
now we both looking crazy. So, yeah, and, I'm glad he's yeah. honest.
He was very honest up front. And, you know, I love how he even took accountability and said, you know, I did what I did and I understand that. And I'm trying to do things now to help younger people so then they don't have to go down those different roads and they can take different avenues and not have to experience what I have experienced.
Yeah. And like kind of what I was just like touching on with not everything being black and white. This is a perfect example. This is definitely a big difference between this one and the previous cases, because he actually did the violence part of it. But it was just crazy to see how he was so upfront about it, how he was so honest about it, and then how much stuff happened before he even got convicted to kind of mentally change him, and how like that was not even used in the case and everything. It's heartbreaking to see. One of the things that was like the craziest part about it for me in this, when they said like, stand up if you've been in jail for like 20 plus years, or you have a sentence of 20 plus years or more, and like pretty much the whole room stood up. It just gave me chills, because like that could be anybody. And and all those people, that's those people's brothers, cousins, sisters, family members. It's like when you go to jail, your whole family is pretty much going to jail in a way.
Yeah. I really like that good scene. Point. When Kim kind of came in and spoke to all those people, and the first thing she said was, she was like, I don't really know
much,
but I'm here to listen and I'm here to learn and I'm here to use my platform to help.
Yes.
And that's exactly what she's doing. So.
Yes.
Pour one out for Kim.
I want to actually touch on that scene, because so they were there because of Dr. Howard. So Dr. Howard, he's a professor from Georgetown University, and he was fighting for education in the DC prison, which is where Mama Lou is. Mm-hmm. So they were getting Georgetown education, basically. So you can see all of them saying, you know, we're so thankful for this opportunity. All prisons should have this, because it makes no sense for us to be locked in here. And when we get out, whatever that may be, we don't even know how to adjust to the outside world educationally or mentally, physically, whatever it may be that they need. So I'm just glad that I want to give a shout out to Dr. Howard, you know, for just fighting for them and just giving them that education that they need, because you can tell it helped a lot of them. And they were very thankful for it. They had a lot of stories to tell about it. So that kind of tied into why they were all there in the first place. They were that part of that education in Georgetown. So that was really good to have that in the prison.
I can imagine there being so many prisons that don't have those programs, or that don't have people that really give you opportunities to like learn a talent or learn a hobby or study. So I think they were, you know, they're fortunate in a way that they were able to get that kind of degree and learn that education. Yeah.
And then it was one girl there. She said that at age of like when she was a little girl, her mom would have like hired tutors for her, and she was like, none of the tutors helped. But once I got this in prison,
that was
so funny.
Yeah,
I was like,
I can totally relate. Like my mom has hired so many tutors for me, and I didn't learn anything. So
right, listen, I'm just glad that she had the opportunity here, because I was like, wow, you would think. Yeah, that was just crazy. But that just shows like that it really works, you know, like that just shows even more that like this should really be pushed in all prison, not just this one. Mm-hmm. So hopefully not only this, you know, that opens up for like the judicial system, but like other prisons to like get education in their prisons,
for sure.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's very necessary.
I can't imagine all of them, all other prisons kind of doing the same things that they do here.
Yeah. Hey.
And definitely therapists. They definitely have to have some therapists in there too, people who really care and who want to do this.
Yes. And so more, so Mamalu, he had one of the most, well, I'm not gonna say most interesting, they're all interesting, but like his case was kind of different too, because his friend Kareem was also in jail for yes. the same exact thing. Uh-huh. And Kareem was released before him. And so, and as we saw, Kareem was actually speaking on his behalf on his scene the whole time. But I'm just glad to see that, you know, Kareem was like, you know, I'm out and I'm trying to get my friend out as well. You know, we got convicted of the same thing. Now, I'm not sure, I don't know if they talk about this, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, what was the difference and why he got out sooner than him?
Or he was got he out part a of year. That?
He, yeah, so he had helped create a, basically like a, I don't want to say a law, but it was basically like, oh, he fought on his own case, and like he was able to remember. Yeah, he kind of like fought on his own, and so then he was able to like show, you know, the right things that were going on. And so then from there, it was like, okay, he's been helping with getting people out sooner than just like, you know, having to spend their whole lives in jail.
Yeah, and I think that's when we got a peak of hope, because that's when Kim was like, well, if Kareem is out, we know we can get him out, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, Kim said, she was like, I wonder if when they leave jail, do they still keep in touch, or do they try and visit, or do they help? And this guy, he had his homeboy, you know, he's trying to help his homeboy out.
Yeah. He better have. I mean, they were in there together.
Yeah, for a long time.
And I think, and they were real friends. They weren't like the next people we're going to talk about. I don't want to say it just yet. But they weren't like them. Like, they met in prison. But they were like real life friends. They went down together. So
yeah.
I was like, you better have your friend back.
Prison, like, I imagine people in prison make like such good relationships with the people they're locked up with.
Especially been there for that long, so definitely. So good news for him, though. So he was released on parole October 2019. And I wanted another cool thing that they threw in there, that he performed with Kanye at a Sunday
show. Yes!
That's like going from lowest to highest. Like, there's nothing better than that.
Kim said it doesn't stop here.
Get that Grammy, Mamalu.
Yes. That's wild. That's
I actually wanted to see that clip. I'm going to have to Google it or something. Maybe it's on YouTube. I don't know. But I want to see that.
Kim is providing like opportunities for these people besides getting them out of jail. Like, she's given like she's gave Alice Johnson like a whole career. Like, she's been on the show so many times. Like, she's working with Kim. Like, it's really
That's
awesome.
Really cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, Kim, but yeah, I was very happy for him. And, you know, he spoke out amongst his community. So it was just really good to see. And, you know, he had a good face about it. Even when he was in jail, he seemed like he had a good face. You know, he started mentoring young men and things like that. When he got out, you can just see 10 times more. So it was a good thing to see.
Hopefully we get his music on iTunes.
Yeah. Right? Like, I need to know what he performed.
I love seeing the reuniting of the families every time someone got out. Like, the hugging and the crying. That's when I really like got chills. Like, I almost cried one time.
Oh, I cried. I didn't go. Okay, so our next person we're going to talk about is George Trudel. So his was interesting to see as well, because he wrote a letter for himself, but it was really for someone else, which was interesting. But so he served 31 years in state prison. He didn't commit a murder at all, but the person that actually committed the murder only served 7 years. So, kind of going back to what we talked about,
how problem.
Things are just not fair. Yeah, that was the main problem there. But you know, his wife stood by him, and you know, she was fighting for him hard.
She's a writer.
Because thanks to him, or thanks to her, he was granted clemency. And so once he was finally released, he started fighting for his friend by the name of David Shepherd, which his case was way less harsh than his was, and they had very similar cases. So that just kind of goes to show, like, you know, this is the one you met in prison. You could have forgot about him. I think he also mentioned that when he got out, people were like, don't worry about us, go live your best life. But he definitely worried about his friend David Shepherd. So, but before we get into David though, the main problem in this case is that the person that actually committed the crime only got 7 years, and he faced 31 years.
What is the reasoning behind that? Why is that? I don't understand.
I don't think we got the details either. That's what I want to say about all these cases. We got some information, but we didn't get all the details, I feel. On why things happen the way. I mean, we probably could have. I'm just saying, like, why things happen the way they happen, we don't really know, but it's sad.
They did touch a little bit at the end about that when it comes to the judge and then it comes to Congress, how they have to, they kind of declare with the sentencing and stuff like, you know, murder, what this is going to get and different things like that. That's why you guys kind of recall how one judge was like, I couldn't even do this anymore because it was too harsh. And so then he left. So, it you know, that's something I wanted to get more background on like explaining how that works and how, you know, Congress is determining that. And because I thought it was just the judge. I thought the judge could say, you know, you get 50 years, you get 10, you could get parole, house arrest.
You get like 30. That,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, double you or go nothing. Home
now, you know, that's how I thought it was. But apparently I think it's like higher up. Like the judge has some say so, but I think it goes like, you know, a range of things. That's why the one guy.
Well, it wasn't like one particular case. It was like multiple people there where she was saying how the person who did the crime got less time than the person who was the accomplice.
Yeah.
Can you guys think of a reason why that is?
No. And I mean, they had to have had different lawyers.
Lack of evidence. Lack
of evidence, different lawyers, probably like confessing and then like, oh, you'll go down as something else. You'll go down as like second degree murder when you're really the person that murdered them. It's just like, there's so many different variables that can cause craziness in a courtroom. And I feel like that's what's happened for a lot of these people.
Probably collaborate with the officers. You never know on this case. But I'm glad you mentioned the judge really fast because it actually broke my heart. Because he was so sad. You know, he was like, I stepped down. And I feel like to step down from such a job like that, it kind of goes to show, like, even he knows how cruel it could be. Because he was like, you know, I don't want to just give these people these sentences when I personally don't feel like they deserve it. And like you said, we always thought that judges were the say all be all. But, you know, he's the face of whatever we see. So, you know, if he's sentencing these people are going to be coming after him, not Congress and the governor and, you know, the president or whoever has a say so. So I kind of felt bad for him.
When he said he said like he doesn't like telling the children, like people who are 15, like your life sentence
over.
Talking about the mandated sentencing, like just because you did this thing at the age of 14, we have to give you life. It's like I can only imagine that, but like to say I'm gonna give a 14-year-old life in prison and they're never gonna be able to make a mistake in life again, it's like I don't know what I was doing at 14. Luckily, I was in a good position, but like, that's crazy as an adult to give a 14-year-old life in prison. And I could see where it was really hurting his soul.
One of the inmates actually said that when they were in the room with Kim came in, he actually said that, you know, some of us were convicted at the age of 14, 16, 17. And he said, we've matured since then. We're not the same people we were at that time. Who knows what we did at that time?
Yeah.
You know, people change. I mean, these people are now 30, 40, 60, 50 years old now. Like at 14, you were still growing. You're kind of immature. Mm-hmm. You probably had a young childhood, you know, at 14, like Kim said, you depend on your family. You can't really just go out and fend for yourself. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you get yourself wrapped in a crazy situation, I mean, you're 14. There's not, it ain't like, go get a car, go get a job. That's why people went to the streets or whatever the case was. So I definitely agree. Like, these judges need to look more deeper into their past. And not with just this case, with a lot of stories, like, look into their past, get all the work, because no one's just out here there are people out here doing this. But in these people's cases, they're not just killing people for fun or just.
Yeah.
Well, all these people had troubled childhoods. They all had people around them who weren't good for them. And I think we can all agree, we all, I feel like, are on the same page where people deserve second chances. Like, that was kind of one of the themes. Because we all made mistakes, like, not as extreme as these people, but, like, I've made plenty of mistakes when I was, like, 13, 14, 15. Like, I can't imagine
going to jail and, like...
I mean, we didn't do anything that bad, but...
But still.
And then also, looking at it as well... imagine you going in at 14. So we all know, like, in 14s, like, those are, like, you know, the mid-2000s or maybe,
get
like,
into
later.
High school.
But, like, you're going into the high school phase, right? Imagine you going in at that time and then you're just now coming out. So not only are you coming out and technology is different, you know, way of life is different. Our life is not the same back in 2005, 2010. Right. You know, everything is totally changed. I mean, there's TikTok now. So,
like,
and it's certainly not been the same in the past month because we've all been quarantined.
Yes. And I also want to say, like, I mean, maybe they're not this too, like, far off, but I kind of want to say, like, did half of these people even know who Kim Kardashian was? I mean, not saying they probably
don't. That's what I'm saying.
But in my head, I'm thinking, like, do people know how big she is? Like,
if I was one of those people and she walked in, I would be like, Kim!
No, seriously, I mean, exactly. But, I mean, they're in prison, so it's kind of like, okay, Kim, you're here. You know, we're going to wait for you, but... But it's like, in my head, I'm thinking, like, do they know who is really in here helping them? Yeah.
And imagine if they know Kim Kardashian from, like, 2007.
When her sex release was,
right. To, like, now she's evolved into such a totally different woman.
Mm-hmm. Businesswoman.
Like, right, okay.
Businesswoman.
I mean, and now she, like, has her own empire thing. So imagine, like, you don't even know, like, her... transition, or some people probably went in the 90s and don't even know her.
I mean, like, if anything, they only know her from, like, rap songs or rap, like, rap stories or anything Kanye adjacent, just because that's probably the only
or her dad
getting that getting in the jail cell. But, like, there's nothing new positive. There's no new positive messages getting to them. So it's crazy to see, or it's interesting to see what they would be thinking when they hear Kim Kardashian West is going to come in the jail cell. It's like, aren't you Kanye's wife? Or weren't you in that, like, the tape earlier? Like, there's so many prejudging biases.
Factors,
But there's still people who judge Kim and think that she's still the same way she was 10 years ago. Like, that's why Kim is on top, and she has accomplished so much, and people are still so fascinated with her, is because she is evolving and she's doing so much with her career, and, like, she really is giving back. She doesn't have to do any of this if she doesn't want to. She has her life, she has her money, her family. Like, she does not have to go into this. I think it's really, really awesome.
And you can tell she's genuine. I feel like I feel like people could say that if, like, it was kind of off, but I feel like Kim is very genuine in everything she does. I don't get a bad or ill bad from Kim. I mean, I personally like the Kardashians, but, you know, I read into people that always have something to say about them, and it's kind of like, there's only so much you can say when they keep showing you that they're people. And I feel like it's not just them. All celebrities go through this. Like, people are going to judge you no matter what. No matter what your past is, no matter how good your features, people are going to have something to say. So it's just kind of like, as long as you keep showing them that you're bigger than that and you're higher than that, which is what Kim is doing, you're going to always win. So I'm proud for Kim for that. Okay, last one, because we got we got in there. But so David Shepherd, so he was the one that was tied to his friend George Trudeau. So his story was crazy. Oh my goodness. So how he got in prison was, he gave him and his friend, you know, that he said they were out, you know, lollygagging, drinking beer, you know, just being teenagers, you know, just hanging out. And they gave these two guys a ride, and they said they need to get some medication. And so they said, once they're in the store, they noticed they were taking a little too long, and come to find out, they're actually robbing the place. And not only did they rob the place, but they shot the owner of the store. And that's what connected him to the actual being in prison. He didn't shoot. He was in the car. I don't think he was driving. I think he was a passenger, if I'm not mistaken. And he's the one that went down. Now, they didn't mention the other two guys actually did the robbery. We don't know what happened to them, but he was one of the ones that went down. And he was one of the other people that was very strong in this. Everyone said he was very strong the whole way through. He got involved in hospice. He started donating sneakers to kids who can't afford it, all while in prison. I don't know how the heck you do that, but he did it.
We can make it happen.
He made it happen. So we just want to applaud for that. But what do you guys think about David?
David, this is another thing where I'm literally Floyd Mayweather punching the air. Because I cannot believe this of him. You didn't even do anything. This reminds me, I'm from Chicago. So this reminds me of when I was growing up and I was a teenager and stuff, and I was always told, you know, you got to be careful who you're getting in the car with, who you're with, and everything. And one of my biggest fears ever would be, like, getting in a car with a guy and you don't know he has a gun. Because, I mean, I've heard of this happen lots of times before. You're in the car with him, and then you get pulled over or something like that. They search the car. They see, like, there's either drugs in the car or, like, a gun or anything like that. And then you're the one blamed for, or you're an accomplice. Because, you know, sometimes people they don't care about knowing the whole story. You were there, so now you're a part of it. You know. That his case actually really, like, stood out a lot to me. And just because of that, because even still to this day, I get nervous. Like, if I don't really know you for real, you know, and you're hanging, you know, I don't really know you.
Hey, safety first.
Look, I don't know what you got going on. And I think, you know, his case was just crazy because he did not a thing. And the fact that he didn't let that change his heart was so beautiful. He didn't let he could have been cruel. He could have said, you know, like, F the government, F the just pissed off at everybody, but he chose to take it into a different, he chose to take his anger and the frustrations of the cards he was dealt in life and turn it into something positive. And that's what really warmed my heart.
This is another case too. Where, oh, go ahead.
Now you can go.
No, I was just gonna say that it was I was just agreeing with you. It's just like is what we were raised guilty by association, and it's sad that this is literally like the most extreme version of it. But that like
for real though,
he was just there. He was just in the car, and they tried him as he was in the building where the shooting happened. And there's just so many false accusations, and just like. It's hard to watch. And I mean, like you said, it hit because that's stuff we've been ingrained in learning. It's like you got to know who you're with at all time, what they're doing, what they're about, because at the end of the day, if you're with them, you're one of them.
I do want to ask you guys this because this it went through my head when I was watching this case. Okay, so we know he obviously didn't go in the story. They can easily pull evidence that he was an actual shooter or the case is, but he actually was in the car. Now, usually when things like this happen, I mean, if you do a robbery, the people in the car know that you're doing a robbery because you're all in it together. But in his case, he had no clue. So in my head, I was thinking, how can they prove that he had no clue? You know, because I mean, if he's in the same car that the robbers got in, it's kind of like,
really
what can the judge say to be like? Because I mean, at the end of the day, we can only know what it looks like. And I'm not saying he's guilty, not at all. But I'm just saying in the mind of them, you know, just trying to sentence him, how could he defend himself on that level? You know?
It's hard, but I do think there are certain questions that can be asked in order to really take him out of the equation.
Yeah.
For example, you know, like if you and somebody are going to rob, you know, the place, you're going to know certain things. There's going to be certain details that are going to be
only you would know if you were the one.
Only you would know if you're doing it. So I mean, you know, you can tell.
I'm interrupting you. That's my fault.
No. It's totally cool. I was just going to say, you know, there's details. And like I said, it's the people that we're choosing to put justice in their hands, you know, it's up to them to want to do their job and really investigate. You could tell when somebody's lying. I know everybody has at least seen one episode of First 48. And you know how they'll start singing like a canary when... You know, or the people who really didn't have anything to do with it, they just don't know. So it's just like, you know, there's certain questions that can be asked.
They probably just didn't put enough pressure on this case like we've seen with some of the other cases. That's probably what it was.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's just weird. Like, I don't know. It sucks. Stuff like that sucks.
It does. And then, so this is another case where Kim went straight and hit it on the nail. So she went to Pennsylvania to meet with the lieutenant governor there. And I was just glad to see that he was on the same page with all of this. You know, he was fighting for their criminal justice system out there as well. And, you know, trying to fight for those who are wrongfully put in prison for the wrong things. So it was just good to see them sit down and talk. George and his wife came along with her. And I was just like, wow, like these guys are really like fighting for one another. Like they didn't have to be here. They didn't have to go. They had to do any of this, but they're all sitting there trying to come up with a plan for David. And you can tell he was just so like when Kim got on the phone, he was like, hey, like, I don't know. I don't know if he really knew who Kim was, but you can just hear it in his tone of voice. Like, girl, it's a breath of fresh air to be talking to you, you know?
Right. I think a lot of these people, like, yeah, they know it's Kim, but I think they're just like, they realize how valuable she is with everything that she's able to do. So they want to talk to her like a normal person because she really is just trying to help them.
Yeah. And she's not just like a, you know, a celebrity who just wants to do it for clout. Like she's doing it for a it's very genuine and it comes from her heart. And you can tell, even, you know, you guys kind of remember how she was getting backlash in the beginning of, like, when she started her apprenticeship and really started her
law school,
and everything. And people were like, oh, you're just doing it just for clout. And it's for the show.
Literally. But the thing is, this wasn't about Kim. This documentary was not about Kim. It was about the people being affected in the system. And that's what's really cool. Like, we really didn't even mention Kim the first half of talking about it. So we were just talking about each individual person and what they went through.
Definitely. We only got we only got Kim in, like, the beginning where they gave a backstory about what's about to happen. That's the only thing we got out of her. And then she also mentioned before, she talked about it because I actually watched the show, Keeping Up Kardashians. But she also talked about, like, you know, she got this passion from her father. Everyone knows her father was a lawyer. So she says she feels like she's stepping into his shoes. So I feel like she definitely did this for the right reasons. And she had the background. Most people don't even have a background. They just want to do law just to do law. But she has some type of connect to it. So that's why I was talking. That she was dealing about it, but good news for David though. He did get clemency. It was a 5-0 vote.
Yay,
clemency vote to come home. So, that's good. I was so happy for him. I was clapping. I was happy for him. So that was really good to see. And actually see that they actually, like, do something good. Like, cause I was nervous. Cause, you know, just because you get this doesn't mean it's gonna be granted. So to see that it was actually granted and it was a 5-0 vote, I was like, we're moving up. We're moving up.
Exactly.
And, you know, also, I feel for the people, especially who are like David, who really didn't do anything, and they didn't do not a thing, and they landed in prison. I honestly, and they do a long time. I feel like the state should run them their cash money.
Oh, for sure.
Some people actually do sue.
Oh, yeah.
After they got out. Yeah, some people sue.
But this should be automatic. Like, run me my money. That's what needs to happen, because you can't, I mean, money doesn't substitute time in your life, but, you know, at least give them something. Because you took away their life, the time they could have with their family, you know, their advancement. And then on top of it, you know, I think they should also give them counseling when you leave prison or jail. There should be at least, like, a mandatory, like, 3 months of counseling or something. Because to adjust to life of 20 years.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's my God. What the
heck? Life changes every 2 years, I feel.
Changes.
Every year.
So imagine you don't get out. You went in jail in the 90s.
Yeah. I can't even imagine, because I'm, like, 22, and these people have been in jail before I was even born. So I literally cannot imagine.
And keep in mind, these, I mean, obviously, but these are just some of the few people. Like, as we watch the documentary, you know, there's a lot of people that are wrongfully in jail for they're in jail for committing murders that they didn't commit. They said that, you know, the women are, it's 2 times more women in prison than men now. It's just crazy to see all the statistics behind it. And it's just kind of like, we have a long way to go. This is just scratching the surface of what needs to be done. But this is the start that we need. And, you know, because, I mean, this is a big platform. Kim has a huge platform. This was on, Oxygen?
Oxygen.
Yeah, so this is going to reach a lot of people, but hopefully in the right way. And like I said, we can't, like Kim said, we can't just snap and everything will be done. But this is definitely the start that we need. So...
And there's no one, one better to do it than Miss Kim Kardashian West.
She's doing it. And people have to, I don't care. You can, even if you still want to have your ill thoughts about her, you're going to give her credit for this. Because even when I was watching, I was like, no, y'all got to know what she's about. Like, I'm one of those ones, I've always been a fan of her, but this woke me 10 times more, like, for sure.
And it shows, I think, also how grateful we even are now to be able to be even at our homes and be with family and to know, you know, love and to really have that support. And it also makes you very grateful because, you know, it could be anybody, especially when they gave the statistics about Black men that, like,
one out of every three.
They've touched either some type of way with the jail system or anything like that. And then, you know, because I would just think it being Black anyway, you know, especially because I get scared anytime, like, you know, you get pulled over or anything like that, and you just never know. And so to know that, you know, Black men have to face that as well was just crazy.
And that, you know, any innocent life, you can be very innocent and your life can be taken away and you have no control over that. So that, I think that's the part for me that personally was like, wow, let me make sure I tread lightly, because clearly they don't care about your past or your future, or if you miss America, they don't care. You're going down and they want you to go down. So I was, so that's why I said it just kind of made you kind of just be more aware and just be like, it don't matter no more. Like you, even if you feel like you got all the evidence, all the proof, they're going to do what they want to do at the end of the day. And I think that's what, I think this whole project taught me that. That's the biggest lesson I learned from this for me. So, do you have any more? Oh, go ahead.
The last thing I was just going to say, that also shows a little bit of like class too, and how society is, if you don't have the best, you know, a lot of people at public defenders are people who are just like, you know, they're either straight out of law school or they don't win a lot of cases. So they're just trying, you know, and those are given to you by the state. So those are just free lawyers for you, versus like someone who's like Ted Bundy ended up doing time, but like, you know, someone like that who was able to get a really good lawyer, you know, it's just different. And those are people who need like beyond life.
And it's people that deserve it, like Kim said.
Right. So it's kind of like, you know, it also goes on the way our society is ran too. If you got the money, then you're able to, you know,
there's get, you a get so many advantages in life when you have
that's money. And that's just a tip for anybody that's watching, or you know, or if you want to be rich one day, I feel like it is very important to always have a lawyer. Like I know for me personally, once I get to a certain point in life and have that money, I'm going to have a bum lawyer on standby for anything necessary, okay? Because life is crazy and things come at you. And it don't even have to be anything like legal. It could be, you know, family. It could be anything that you might just need a lawyer for.
Yeah.
So let's get into, well, special segment really fast. Do we have time?
Yeah, so let's just like pretend that Kim is right here. Like, what would you guys want to ask her and what do you think she would say? So I'll go first. I would want to ask her how she chooses the specific letters to really pursue, because she can't read them all. She can't really work on them all. So I would kind of want to ask her that. And I think what she would say is maybe like the detail and the heart and like what she really connects with, which letter she really, really connects with and thinks that she can do. I think that's what would help her choose which ones to really focus on.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I would ask Kim, Miss Kim, I would ask her, you know, if your dad was still alive, how do you think the work you're doing now makes him feel, would make him feel? And the follow-up question to that would be, you know, how would it be working with him to do the work that you're doing now? Like, how would that be?
Mm-hmm. That'd probably be fun for her.
What do you think she'd say?
Ooh, I think she would... I think she would definitely, she would say he would be super proud of her and all of what she's doing. And I think she would also say they would have a blast. They would have so much fun. And that she would definitely be driving the boat on this one. And he would definitely be like her cheerleader.
I feel like she would definitely be calling him a lot.
Yeah, I think he would be like her. Yeah, she'd be like, so dad. And I think he would definitely be her big cheerleader for it all. And I think he would really be pushing for her the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah. My question for her would be, with her being so new to this, what's the most eye-opening fact that she learned? For me, it was like 1 in 23 Black men have some type of supervision over them. Like, not only have some Black men been in jail, but like still have some type of supervision over them, no matter what they're doing. 1 out of 23 is just crazy to me. So asking her, seeing what that, I would assume it has something to do with Black men, because she's now a mother of Black boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would ask her, I would ask him, how do people go about reaching out to her? I'm pretty sure, you know, as we were watching, or as the viewers are watching, they want to know, like, well, you helped a lot of people. How can we get that help? So I would ask her, like, what is the process to reach out to her? Who do we contact to get that information? I will assume probably, like, her publicist or something. I don't
also
know.
Also, like, her Twitter. She said she found Alice Johnson on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Okay. Cut 50 as well.
Yeah, yeah. So that's all the time that we have for tonight. We did have some good news and gossip, but there was just tweets about, you know, what people thought, correct?
Yep, and they just impacted so many people. Yeah. But we've talked about it so many times. We were affected. So many other people were affected and motivated from this.
Yes. So that's all we have for tonight. A lot of good cases that you saw. We'll get more into them. If you just go follow their journey, you'll go online. You can see what happens with them. But until next time, I'm your host, Sierra Stafford. You can find me on my Instagram at Sierra Stafford TV and my Twitter at Sierra B. Stafford. Where can they find you guys?
Yes. You can find me on Instagram at Zach Weinberg, ZachWeinberg. You can follow me on Twitter because I tweet about the Kardashians every week.
You can follow me on Instagram at @IAM_SANA_. And then on Twitter, you can follow me at @IAM_SANA.
Yeah, and you guys want to continue the conversation with me, you guys can follow me at Jeff Will Jr. on all social media platforms.
Yes.
Bye guys.
See ya.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.